You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my webpage at dr-history.com for over 440 true stories of the Old West. Also, now available on Amazon, my first book, a historical fiction based on true events entitled Coal Miner to Cowboy. The story of a young man born in England in 1850. He wants to be a cowboy and makes his way to America, travels from New Orleans to Independence on a steamboat, hires on as a teamster to Santa Fe, then on a cattle drive to Bozeman, Montana. He also rides shotgun on a stagecoach. He travels with a wagon train, and on his two-year journey, he meets some famous people and keeps a journal of his adventures. The book contains a lot of the true stories from my podcast and is now available on Amazon. Visit my webpage for a link to Amazon for the book, Coal Miner to Cowboy.
Right now, here's another great people, Dr. History.
Good morning, Zeb.
How are you?
Great. Love to see the beets and the spuds coming out now, you know.
And all the trucks on the road.
But, it's just a fun time of the year for me. I enjoy seeing the harvest.
It's a crisp, very, I don't know, the fall has a different feeling than any other season.
It does.
And the trees changing colors and everything, and the leaves falling down.
Yeah, we were up in the mountains here last week, and the beauty.
Is it almost too late to go up?
Oh, no. No, there's
really?
Still a lot of green, but a lot of the yellow, the red. I mean,
is that right?
Yeah, beautiful. Yep.
Are we going to talk about Dr. Budweiser, Schiebel, Fluster, or whatever?
Nope. Although I did get a report from him. He and his wife did a bike trip over there in Germany. Just had an amazingly great trip.
And, oh, really?
He sent me some details about that. And anyway, he had a great trip over there in Germany.
Good, good. Anybody else?
No, not lately.
Oh, okay.
So today, Zeb, we've talked about a lot about gold rushes.
Oh, yeah.
We've talked about, and you and everybody is more familiar with the term the 49er.
Yeah, right? The football team.
No. Oh. But have you heard of the 48ers? No.
No.
Okay. Well, come back with me here.
Okay.
We're going to talk about the 48ers.
All right.
So the question is, well, you know, the influx of gold seekers into California actually began with the discovery of gold, of course, at Sutter's Mill.
Right.
And that was in 1848.
Oh.
And kind of really reached its peak about 1852. So it was really only about four or five years that the major rush took place. Okay. And, you know, as many as 300,000 people came into the territory during the gold rush. But so how much did the 48ers take out of the riverbeds, the sandbars, and the rock? And it varied according to a man's strength, his ambition, and his luck. At first, nearly everyone could pan from $10 to $15 of gold dust if he worked from dawn to dark.
Per day.
That's pretty good. That's really good. Now, considering, well, think of this, considering the fact that in San Francisco, prior to the discovery, a cook received maybe $25 to $30 a month. And they're pulling out, you know, 10 to 15 a day, and a clerk made maybe $50 to $60 a month. So $10 to $15 a day, that's really, really good.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But as in all such strikes, there were the fortunate ones. A guy named John Sullivan, an Irish teamster who'd been earning $5 a day, took out $26,000 from the diggings named after him on the Stanislaus River. A man named Hudson obtained some $20,000 in 6 weeks.
Wow.
6 weeks.
Now, that would be the equivalency of what
today? At least 10 times, don't you think?
Would it be? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he dug that out from a canyon. A boy called Davenport found 77 ounces of pure gold one day and 90 ounces the next day at a place called Dry Diggings. And Mr. Wilson took $2,000 from under his doorstep.
What?
He had a cabin and just, I guess, was digging around. And he found $2,000 worth of gold next to his cabin.
I got to ask you a question real quick. And you know all about gold mining, and you know all about theft and thievery of gold mines. What prevented people from coming in and taking part of the claim?
Well, we always know there were claim jumpers.
Yeah.
And there were thieves or robbers. Yeah.
But what were the boundaries that they were supposed to adhere to?
At that point, I don't think they were making claims. I think they were just going from stream to stream, river to river.
Kind of helter-skelter.
Yeah, just wherever they could go.
Oh.
So, you know, there's another story of three Frenchmen who discovered gold when they removed a stump out in their yard.
I heard about that.
They just removed the stump.
Yeah.
Yeah. And within a week, they dug up $5,000 worth of gold.
Wow.
So on the Yuba River, a Middle Fork, one man picked up nearly 30 pounds of gold from a piece of ground less than 4 feet square.
You're kidding.
30 pounds. Now, I don't know what that amounts to in dollars, but it has to be huge. There's a guy named Amador. He relates that he saw diggings which yielded $8 to every shovel full of dirt.
Wow.
Every shovel full. He and a companion with 20 native laborers took out from 7 to 9 pounds of gold a day. A guy named Robert Burney saw miners at a place called Dry Diggings mining from 50 to 100 ounces a day. That's huge.
Is this still available or capable today?
No. Like I say, it lasted about 4 years.
Oh.
And it was done.
So we don't have to pack up
and
leave.
We'll just stay right where we're at.
Oh, okay.
So there's another guy, a historian to the gold rush, and here's what he says about this. He said, quote, well-authenticated accounts described many known persons as averaging from 1 to 200 a day for a long period. Numerous others were said to be earning from $500 to $800 a day. If indeed a man with a pick and pan did not easily gather some $30 or $40 worth of dust in a single day, he just moved off to some other place which he supposed might be richer. Now, you'd think if he's making $30 or $40 a day, he'd stay where he's at.
Well, yeah, looking at the ratio of what expenses were then and compared to now and the profits and everything, yeah, I'd have stuck right there.
Yeah, but we're going to talk about some of those expenses. So a correspondent of the Californian wrote from Dry Diggings in the middle of August 1848 that, quote, the earth is taken out of the ravines and is carried in wagons and packed on horses from 1 to 3 miles to the water where it is washed. $400 has been an average for a cartload. Instances have occurred here where men have carried the earth on their backs and collected from $800 to $1,500 a day. So they're loading dirt in backpacks and hauling it to where they can wash it in a stream or a river.
Can you imagine what you'd think of somebody that would be walking down the road today with a backpack full of dirt?
Yeah, $100 pounds of dirt. Wow, man, this guy.
We got a weirdo here.
Yeah, okay. But there were complications in this golden paradise. Men unaccustomed to the hard physical labor found that working in knee-deep in the icy water all day. This is cold. Ice cold water.
They must have had arthritis believe.
You know, and then they would fill a pan or an Indian basket with dirt, lowering it into the water, then shaking the pan really, really vigorously to wash out the sand and the clay. And then here again, sleeping at night in the cold and the dampness, eating little more than bacon, sourdough bread and coffee. They had colds and fevers and pneumonia, dysentery. And then their equipment.
And those were the good days.
That's when you felt good. Well, with their rudimentary equipment, they could mine just shallow. They couldn't go deep, deep digging like some of the other gold strikes were.
Yeah.
So when the surface gold was exhausted, they'd you know, maybe work there for a few weeks and then move on, looking for fresh deposits.
Holy cow.
So they
when
just
you say moved
easy.
On, that solidifies the point I was making earlier. I mean, it just sounds like everything was helter-skelter and nobody really had a claim on
right.
anything.
They just moved around just wherever if they were making pretty good, but it wasn't what they thought good enough, they just try to find another place.
Wow.
So now, here's what I thought was interesting. You've heard the term mine the miners.
Yeah.
Okay, listen to this. The supplies, which now began to come in over the Indian trails, took their prices not merely from the cost of hauling. Freighters charged $300 to transport 3 barrels of flour, 1 barrel of pork, and 200 pounds of small stores, the 50 miles from Sutter's to the diggings.
Wow.
Now, but also from the belief that men who pick up wealth from the ground should share it with those sacrificing enough to deny themselves this great opportunity. Pans worth 20 cents, you know, a pan for panning,
yeah,
cost 20 cents. Now they're selling them for $8 to $16.
A pan?
For one pan. A 50-cent box of what they call seedless powders cost $24. Every pill, regardless of its value, cost $1.
Wow.
40 drops of laudanum cost $40. Shirts sold at $16 a piece, and they probably only normally would cost a couple of dollars.
I don't know,
like that.
But that's still a good buy.
Yeah.
Well, who's selling them for $16? I'll call him.
You wish. The Reverend Mr. Colton, touring the mining area in October, wrote, quote, "We pay at the rate of $400 a barrel for flour. $400.
$400. And how big a barrel is it?
Just like a keg, you know.
Oh, I see.
You know, like a, I suppose like a 50-gallon drum.
Wow.
You know. $4 a pound for poor brown sugar. $4.
Poor?
Yeah. $4.
What makes up poor brown sugar?
That's a good question. $4 a pound for what they call indifferent coffee.
Indifferent?
Indifferent. And as for meat, there is none to get except jerk beef, which is the flesh of the bullock cut into strings and hung up in the sun to dry.
Oh,
now,
I tell you what.
That doesn't sound...
I could go on a real diet.
Yes. Now, as entrepreneurs came into the camps to build little hotels and restaurants, prices went even higher. A breakfast at a place called Coloma, consisting of a box of sardines, bread, butter, cheese, and 2 bottles of ale, cost $43.
Now, you've got to be kidding me.
Now, Zeb, I've had some really good breakfasts, but I have never paid $43 for a really good breakfast.
I am not about to.
So, now, here's how it divided out. By the fall of 1848, those prospectors who were mining an ounce a day, about half of the miners, were spending their ounce for the bare necessities and consequently were working for their keep. So the first half of all the guys working were only making enough to just get by.
I see.
That was it. Now, another quarter of the people, maybe they had bad luck or they were just slower, found that they could not average the ounce a day necessary to live on, so they had to go to work for someone else so they could afford to eat. Now we're down to the last quarter of all these miners.
Mm-hmm.
The remaining quarter took out a profit ranging from a few hundred dollars to some pretty good fortunes. And of those, only about 5% actually really became wealthy.
5%?
Of the 300,000 miners and
wow.
prospectors, about 5%.
Wow.
So, you know, and unfortunately, no one, because everybody was busy finding gold, nobody paid attention to these guys that were exhausted. They were sick. Some of them laying sick for months, and a lot of them died because they didn't have any care. The ones who caused the great excitement were those who returned to the towns with a bunch of gold. And then another wave of humanity started for the mines, another rush, because they'd say, oh, hey, over here in this other ravine, we found gold. And so all of a sudden, hundreds or maybe thousands would head over to that area.
I was just going to say, somebody could start a rumor and everybody would vacate,
oh, yeah.
and then you're left there with all the gold that they would have dug.
Well, the trouble is they came in flashing their gold,
oh.
showing, hey, look what I got, you know, see
yeah.
these gold nuggets and stuff like that. So There was a Dr. John Marsh who organized a company among his neighbors. They loaded pack animals with food and mining equipment. They put on red shirts and boots, which were becoming standard equipment for prospectors.
Their boots were red,
no,
too?
Red shirts.
Oh.
Well, and then it says, and boots.
I see.
I don't think they were red.
Okay.
Standard equipment for prospectors, and they made their way north to the Yuba River near, and here Dr. Marsh struck a rich bar, taking out $50 of gold an hour from the very beginning.
Wow.
He worked 10 hours. That's $500 a day.
Yeah.
So.
That's like making wages like a, what did you used to do?
Never mind.
Oh.
Another guy, Thomas Larkin, was satisfied with a modest 300% profit on his goods that he sold.
300%.
Well, like I said, a pan cost 20 cents. He's selling it for $8 to $16. Marsh sold beads and sugar to the Indians at the rate of a cup of beads for a cup of gold.
Oh, my.
So the Indians would accept, you know, because they could go find gold just as easy.
Yeah.
You know, when he ran out of supplies, he ended up by selling the red shirt off his back to a Native American for $300.
A shirt?
A shirt. But Marsh.
No wonder the Indians got mad and went on the warpath.
Yeah. So now he's 49 years old. He was considered too old for this kind of rugged existence.
Oh, my.
He got sick and had to return home, carrying with him $40,000 in gold for something under 6 months of work.
Wow.
A bonanza. You wouldn't mind getting sick and selling the shirt off your back.
Really?
You'd sell the shirt off your back for $40,000.
Well, $300 for a shirt? Come sure. Get my closet.
Yeah, I can help you out here. Well, so until his discovery of gold at Sutter's Mill, James Marshall had little luck or success. He found a sawmill, you know, for Sutter,
Yeah. And
getting Sutter to stake him should have established him, but he couldn't find anybody to work the mill because they were all out hunting for gold.
I was going to say, where did they get the labor?
Well, that's the problem. So, and the bad thing is, miners were squatting on Sutter's land. He couldn't get people to work at the mill. Sutter had some oxen that ended up being butchered to feed the miners. You know, things were not going well for Sutter.
That didn't sound like.
Nor for this John Marshall, even though he was part of that whole thing.
Yeah.
He didn't do any good either. He didn't have any luck. But John Sutter, who had no help to run a sawmill, he had a flour mill, a tannery, and a thresh grain, compensated for his losses by opening a store at the fort, which was the main line to the mines. So renting out space to merchants, he also grub-staked several prospectors on a share-and-share basis. And here's what he said optimistically, quote, "There's no need for me to go into the mountains to make my pile of gold. The gold will flow to me."
Amen.
And exactly, like yeah. I said, the miners mine the miners.
Now, these were the 48ers.
48, but then on into 49, 50,
oh.
You know.
So they
into about 52.
When the NFL called, they could use the term
49ers. They could use the term 49er.
Okay.
I don't know how good they did.
Okay.
So the widespread rumor that Sutter made, had been made a millionaire by the discovery of gold brought the rest of his past down on him. He had a past. There's a Colonel Stewart, a new Russian consul in San Francisco, arrived at the fort to collect about $31,000 that were owed him by Sutter. A guy named James Douglas, head of the Hudson's Bay Company, made a visit to collect $7,000. Another guy came to collect $3,000. Dozens of other creditors came by to collect. See, the problem was Sutter was a very good man as far as helping other people.
Yeah.
But not necessarily in keeping the money. So he would help some of these immigrants that were down and out.
Well, let me ask you a quick question. Where was the money source? I mean, the actual currency source to exchange for the gold and vice versa?
You know, I think a lot of it went up into San Francisco eventually, where they were able to put it into banks. And at that point, I'm trying to remember if there was actually like the gold pieces. You know,
no.
the different coins.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. But, you know, Sutter, he kind of went a little crazy. He had a son named August who kind of took over and eventually actually settled all of his father's debts.
Really?
This son did. And anyway, Sutter had a town site that was actually became known as Sacramento City. And they sold some lots there. And so, again, he was able to pay off all of his debts. But Sacramento City went from a tent and lean-to town. It became a place where, you know, it was a very became a wealthy area.
Sacramento.
Yeah,
Sacramento. Yeah, now City. It houses politicians.
Yeah, all his money could have been paid that he made, paid all of his debts. So his son was very good about helping him get out of debt. But, you know, eventually Sutter ended up on a farm, just kind of living by himself. He didn't have much. He lived without much money. His family did the housework. And basically the discovery of gold kind of undone him.
Really?
But anyway, by the end of 1848, there were some 8,000 to 10,000 miners in the Sierra Nevada.
Wow.
By the end of the year of 1848, $10 million worth of gold had been dug out of the ground, of which $2 million was shipped east. $2 million was consumed by the miners in food and clothing and medications and drink. Another $1 million was spent in building the 100-odd mining communities, a few of which became permanent towns.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of gold that was just almost kind of disappeared.
But doesn't it make sense that there would still be gold right there?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, we have mining going on out here at Black Pine.
Yeah.
You know, they took a lot of gold out of there.
Well, what about in those regions where you're talking about?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know if there's still mining going on over there.
I see.
In that area. But
and they're selling pans for $40 a pan.
Probably.
Okay.
But, you know, a lot of the guys, after they became very successful, they went back to their homes in Sonoma, San Francisco, San Jose, Santa Cruz. They invested in ranches, businesses, residential properties, shops, hotels, homes, and did very, very well.
Yeah. So those were the 48ers.
The 48ers.
That turned into the 49ers.
And the 50s and the 51ers and the 52ers.
That's
and
right.
By then, it was pretty much done.
I tell you, that's interesting because I still think you and I could go down to Sutter's and probably start digging.
We could start digging, and after a while, you and I would be saying, after about a half an hour, in fact, I'm thinking you and I are going to say, let's go find a good place to eat.
You stand in the water, and I'll stay on shore, and you hand it up to me.
You direct the affair.
Yeah, I'll direct the
affair. You're going to be the,
There you go. Dr. History, excellent story. I didn't know that. I'd never heard of the 48ers.
Yeah.
Thank you.